GOB 37, Waxwing Hysterical. You may not have noticed, but it's already turning into a waxwing winter, and it promises to be one of epic proportions. In my corner of the southeast, there are reports of flocks ranging from half a dozen to 200. So obviously all I need do is look out my window and nothing. Not only are they not stripping my pyracanthus, that was polished off by blackbirds months ago, they're not even tempted by the crabapple that I planted just for them a decade ago, and from which drop rotting crabapples year after untouched year. Are they flying into my neighbour's bushes? Hardly. My neighbours have paved and patioed, dug up and decked, tarmacked and concreted like demented cowboy builders, leaving only the occasional gap for light blighting leylandii or self-sown sycamore. In their wisdom, my local authority has made the park child and dog friendly. In effect, this means it's close to a wildlife desert. There are just a few well-groomed trees interspersed with grass. There are no bushes or undergrowth in which pedos might lurk or drunkards might relieve themselves in the wee small hours. It does provide perches for ubiquitous collared doves and our local parakeets, but precious little else. If I drive out of town to my hedge of dreams, I find blackthorn and hawthorn, sloe and eglantine, which a month ago were positively dripping massive red berry puddles. But that was when the marauding fieldfares and redwings found their bounty and took their fill. I watched them one day as several hundred fieldfares pushed on through, probably going to go even further south for the winter and try their luck across the channel. Continental blackbirds, redwings, song thrush and missel thrushes all got stuck in, and they've stripped the bushes bare, leaving mere crumbs at the table for our overwintering blackcaps and chiffchaffs. Never one to let such local lack get me down, I listened to reports, read my local birding bloggers and trawled the Ornithological Society's website for waxwing words. It seemed that there were still to be had, so off I set every day for a week, but getting not even a sniff of these wandering winter wonders. I didn't give up, however, but she who must shop did suddenly require my taxi service. It seems that her current boot collection is either insufficiently waterproof or stylish, and neither comfortable nor otherwise tolerable, and we must go out and buy more. So it was that, over my freshly darned socks, I pulled on the shoes that I inherited from my granddad several decades ago, donned my army surplus jacket, now back in fashion for the third time, and siphoned off a cup of diesel from the neighbour's car. Then I coaxed the car into shopping mode. Like me, it reluctantly trundled off to a part of town I hoped to mostly avoid. Under a sign that warns, "Here be dragons," life is rife with muggers posing as shopkeepers. There are buildings there which, once entered, do not allow you to leave, so long as one brass farthing still clings to a fold in your purse or hides behind a moth in your wallet. The door alarms scream and klaxons clamour madly if you try to pass out through their portals with a credit card still showing less than 10% overspend on your credit limit. If sufficiently good behaviour has accrued over several months, I'm allowed to sit and wait in the car while the better part of us goes on sorties into the shopping battlefields. This, of course, leaves me in a typically male quandary. Stay put and pawn everything I own, or join the fray, all the while attempting to subvert her buying intentions. I try to achieve this with unflattering comments about the fit of dresses, whatever that means, and by relating horror stories about the carcinogenic qualities of newly purchased clothes. In the end, good sense lost out to my shopping phobia, and I delivered myself into the arms of my Kindle while she ran into Debenhams, all the while scattering tenors while being beguiled by fashion fever. Mere hours later, the boot opened and I felt the car settle 6 inches closer to the tarmac under the weight of her purchases. Okay, it was actually only half an hour and there was but one slim shopping bag. Now stop reading over my shoulder. Exhausted from the fray, my beloved then announced that we would not be going in search of waxwings because all this shopping had produced an appetite such that she could consume a small beast of burden, and I was thus instructed to head for the local subway. We pulled into the sandwich shop car park behind a local carriage just off the bypass, and the love of my life toddled off inside to get some cheesy nachos. I declined such indulgence, pleading an inability to afford savoury snacks of my own because of my newly established impoverishment. Then this morning of purgatory, spent shedding pounds of the wrong sort, was made so much worse. An event unfolded that is likely to run... An event unfolded that is likely to result in more shopping trips than someone of my nervous disposition can cope with. I looked up, and there in a bare tree, sometimes dropping down to gorge on the fruiting bushes, were 11 splendidly attired waxwings, sparkling in the frosty sunshine, glinting off the Texaco sign. Bloody typical. And there endeth one, and it's full of trademarks, because I'm hoping that the product placement will bear fruit.